And everyone, let's give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Coy.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Coy.
My name's Coy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 5th, 2023. My home group is Gracious Living. Meet in Smithfield on Wednesdays at 7:30. And I'm really grateful to be here tonight. It's nice that we can have an intimate meeting. This will definitely be cemented in my memory. It's really nice to be up here and not be afraid. You know, the number one, they surveyed Americans, and the number one fear is not death, but it's public speaking. I get it. But you know what? Today, it's not going to kill me. I'm not going to die from this, and I can actually help somebody with the work that I've put into my recovery, and that's what I'm here for. I'll start off with how it was. As a small child, I was a terror. Like, I was the worst kid you could possibly. I put my parents through hell. I had lots of impulse control, so I would, you know, I would just do crazy stuff. And thank God I don't have kids, because I think I would have probably put myself in a bag and drowned me. But luckily that didn't happen. But from early on, I knew that I didn't feel right. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel right. And it was from very young. I was in search of something to make me feel right, to make me feel normal. And it started off, I had extreme ADD. So my parents put me on Ritalin, and immediately I was sucked into that. Ritalin like took all that behavior issues away. I was like a zombie, and I wanted to be that zombie because I did want to make my parents happy, and I didn't want to get in trouble, and I wanted to make good grades, and that gave me that medication gave me that. But I immediately, so this is my addiction already rearing its head. I'm already taking more than I'm supposed to take. I'm already, you know, staying up for days, and I'm like 7, 8 years old. I'm already stealing medication from other kids. But I just got so much positive praise, like, oh, you're doing so good, you're on the honor roll. You're like, okay, if I could just be like this, then and stay like this, then everything's gonna be okay. So, you know, ultimately that's not feasible, and you know, it did catch up with me, and my parents took me off of it completely. And I was immediately in search of my next gonna make me feel okay substance. And later in high school, is when I picked up my first drink, and automatically I drank to get drunk. I'm taller, I look older, so you know, at 16, 17, I'm able to get in bars, they're not carding me. So I'm drinking, I'm driving from Norfolk back to Smithfield. You know, this is just the things that I do automatically to get a drink and to be a part of something, because that's what was really like a community. Like, I wanted to be with everyone else. I wanted to feel comfortable in my own skin, and alcohol did that for me. And you know, I loved it immediately. You know, I want to tell this story. When I was a kid, like, this is the kind of kid I was. I was like 7, 8. We're in class, and a kid loses their tooth, and I'm like, they're like, oh my God, you're gonna get money from the tooth fairy. This is gonna be amazing. And what did I do? Like, in recess, I go back to their cubbyhole and steal that tooth.
Oh my gosh.
Take it home and tell my parents that I lost that tooth. And, you know, I believed in my heart, like, you could have gave me a lie detector test, and that would have said that tooth came right from the middle of my my mouth. You know, that's just the things that I did. Like, I was a terror. And I don't know how I'm going to make amends to that person, but we'll unpack that later. I drank alcoholically immediately. I didn't want to drink unless I could get drunk. I thought that was the goal. That was always my goal when I drank. And so that progressed. You know, we're okay starting off. You know, we can handle it. I'm young. I can do this. I can get up and go to work. I can do it all. But then other substances started coming into the picture. And so drugs are part of my story. I'm grateful that they are, because I believe in my heart that it got me here sooner than I would just on alcohol. Alcohol has always been the gatekeeper. And I held on to that for as long as I possibly could. Just saying, if I could just drink, okay, it's legal. If I can just do this, if I can just control this, I can do it. But so substances came into the picture. I was using pretty regularly, drinking, using, and I was still doing life. Like, I had a nudge from the judge a little earlier, and I got my life. So I picked up my first career, which is an esthetician working in a spa. I did that, really enjoyed it. It gave me an opportunity. I was only working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it gave me an opportunity to, like, Saturday night, Sunday, Monday to party. So that was, you know, pretty awesome for a while. But then, you know, I'm not growing, and appearance is a lot to me. Like, I'm older. I should have a career. I shouldn't be living with my parents. You know, when I look at it, I thought my life was not unmanageable, but what it was is my circle was so small that it gave a semblance to management, but I wasn't living life. I was just living to drink and drinking to live, and it just repeated and repeated and repeated. And it was probably around 25, I realized that I had the obsession, you know, which it talks about in the book. So the allergy is already triggered, it's going wild, but this obsession. So I have to work because I have to make money, but I'm always thinking about when my next drink is, when am I gonna get to go out, and then I'm just white knuckling it until the weekend where I can really drink how I want to. And ultimately, I went back to school for cosmetology. I'm in school, I'm working full time, and I'm still partying on the weekends, and it just got too much. I don't know what it was. I came home a Saturday night, like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I told my parents and I went to rehab. And so that was my first introduction to AA. I don't know. I got sober the first time because I thought I needed to, because, you know, I didn't have what I thought I should have. You know, I didn't have the money that other people my age had. And it just was all about appearances. So, I really didn't have the, like, gumption to really to throw myself into AA. So, you know, there are suggestions that they give you in AA. And I'm sure those people, like, when I came in, gave those suggestions and told me this is what you need to do. And I remember, like, there was just non-negotiables for me. And this is where I know that is where I derailed, is because I wasn't willing. I didn't have the willingness. Like, I want you to call 3 people a day. Well, I'm not going to do that. I want you to talk in meetings. Well, I'm not going to do that. I want you to call your sponsor and use your sponsor. I don't really need that. But what I did do, and AA did make me feel a part of. You know, I didn't know why all these people around me were happy. Like, I just didn't believe it. I thought it was all like I was. Like, I looked good on the outside. I looked like I had it together. I'm happy in meetings. You know, I'm doing the thing and I look like I have everything, but I am dying on the inside. And I just thought that that's how everybody else was. So we're just faking it in meetings. And when you go home, everyone's miserable. So, how wrong I was. But looking back on it, I had to live through that to know what I was missing. So, you know, ultimately, this is the path that I was meant to go on. I stayed sober. I did lots of service work. So if I have a purpose, I am extremely good. Like I love like any chores or anything, picking up stuff, doing committees, GSR, I do all that stuff. But you know, actually talking to people was not my thing. Like I kept my circle very small of just actually one person who was just like me and like antisocial, and we all sat back in the back and, you know, rolled our eyes and just did this. And I did this for 8 years. So you can stay sober. And it wasn't happy. I was in fear all the time. I didn't, you know, I was not, I was the same person I was. I was just not drinking. So I was a dry drunk with no solution. And I was not willing to do anything more than that. So, so that 8 years comes, and I think I need to move. You know, it's Virginia. It's Virginia. There's not enough people like me in Virginia. So, like, I need to go to California. And so, there's lots of nuts and fruits in California. So maybe I'll be happy there. There'll be more of my kind. So I did move out there, and I did, my bestie was in the program. He was already living out there. So, but I didn't have the same, accountability that I had back here. I didn't have those responsibilities. Nobody was going to miss me in a meeting if I wasn't there. So, you know, just, I'm trudging along. I'm still staying sober. I'm doing, you know, I'm looking okay. I'm doing okay. Everything is great. Like my life is amazing career-wise, everything. Like I have everything I want, but I am so miserable that, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself. But I know I didn't want to drink again because that was the worst. So I'm pulling away. So I did do some things. So some things that are easy. So things that don't involve communication with other people. So I like, even though prayer is communication, but they're not really there with you. So I did pray. I did make my bed. And God, I think that's it. And I went to meetings. Okay. I knew I had three. Had to be three things. So I stopped doing those things. So I stopped praying because I'm just too busy. And I stopped making my bed because I'm just going to get in it tonight. So why do I need to make it? And then I stopped pulling away from meetings because I haven't been able to get over that fear of people. And it was just, you know, like, it was just easier. So I got into a relationship, and he became my higher power. Like we were just so symbiotic. I mean, we were such a good couple, but I didn't know how to, I don't know how to be a friend in a relationship, a son. I don't know how to do any of that. And I wasn't willing at that time to learn how to do any of that. But to ask me, I would have told you that I did. So I can't give anything of myself because I'm just the same shitty person that I was, and I'm not drinking. So, you know, that relationship doesn't work out. And when that doesn't work out, and I had never been in love. I just loved with all my heart, and I wanted it to work. There were like sacrifices that I was willing to compromise. I didn't know what compromise meant. So, you know, I'm thinking this is how relationships are supposed to be. I'm willing to do all these things. You know, I'm a cut and run kind of person. When it gets hard, when it gets tough, I'm out. You know, and that's why I've never had significant relationships, because those relationships always interfere with what I wanted to do. It is the me show, and I'm doing what I want. And if you're in the way, then, you know, you're out. But then I'm desperate for people to love me. You're like, it's such a tough situation to be in. Like when you're so lonely on the inside, but then you can't let anybody in. You know, it's just miserable. And I didn't know that there was a freedom until my sobriety now. So when that relationship ended, I didn't know what to do. So I wasn't doing any of my AA stuff. I had pulled away from meetings, you know. So what did I do? I picked up again. And when I did that, it was a switch in me that said, I don't care anymore. Like, I've heard some people say, you know, they want to be normies. Like, I didn't want to be normie anymore. I had lost 8 years of partying, and I was going to make up for that immediately. So I immediately became, I was just a weekend warrior before. I immediately became a daily drinker, user of every single thing. I wanted to numb myself with anything I possibly could. And I did that for about 2 years. And I lost the career that I had. I lost that. And I thought, you know what? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a hustler. So how can I make money and still party? Well, I mean, selling drugs, I guess, can make you a little money, but I am smarter because it was so funny because I had like three or four people that had been in AA before, and we're all partying together, and we're talking about how smart we are and how much we know, how much more we know now that we have been sober before. We're better now. So you know, we think we're just so smart. So, you know, mailing drugs and using the mail from California to Virginia, you know, to fuel my everything habit. I thought that was a good idea. And I did it actually for a year and a half. And I will tell you, my ego was so big. I never, ever, ever thought that they would catch me. I was so smart. I was so smart. And one day I was just sitting on my bed. And when you use everything and use everything to the max, like everything you could, to the net, and it doesn't work anymore. There was something in me that was just like, I give up. Like, I don't know what else to do. I have literally done it all, everything at the same time, you know, and nothing is working. Nothing, you know, and at first it did, but now it's not. And I'm just stumped. I'm stumped. I don't know what to do. I did say a prayer. I thought suicide would be I couldn't do it though. So I'm like, well, I can't do that, but you know, there's gotta be something else. So anyways, I say a prayer and you know, I wasn't going to change. So anyways, ego was there. I'm not going back to AA because they're going to judge me. They're going to judge me. They turned their back on me when I went out and relapsed. But ultimately, you know, they supported me until they realized that I wasn't coming back in. So I can't be upset with them and have a resentment towards them because they did exactly what I did. You know, they reached out to me in the beginning and I, you know, immediately shut them down. I'm fine. I've got this. It's not that serious, you know, and it really was. So, you know, of course they're going to pull back because we're not like-minded people anymore. I come to AA to be around sober people who are working a program who I can share my experience with and who can share their experience with, and we can hopefully grow. That's why I love the fellowship is because we have that. You know, I had that, you know, and now my life is about drugs and alcohol. So, you know, of course they distanced themselves, but I wasn't going back. Like I didn't think that was an option. I don't know why. I had just done it 8 years and it's because I've done it 8 years and I was still miserable. So why would I want to go back to that when I'm having at least a little bit of fun relatively? So I said that prayer and a couple of days go by and there's a knock on the door and they're like, you know, Coy Mullins, we're Homeland Security. We're here to serve a warrant for your arrest. We're here from Virginia. So they flew from Virginia. And man, that was, you know, I didn't see it at the time, but that was such a blessing. That saved my life. It really did. I luckily had a decent record, so they didn't give me what they could. So I was looking at 15 years Like, and I had a friend that had served 15 years I was partying with that said, hey, you may not want to do this. You could serve 15 years. And I said, no, they're not going to get me. I promise you. I am so much smarter than that. And when they threw that on the, like, that's when I wanted to kill myself. Because, like, you know, I can't use drugs and I'm going to be locked up. So I can't do that. What was that?
Respectfully.
It was a book. That's okay.
Oh, it's the spirits.
I told you.
Well, just relax.
Yeah.
It's a 30-minute warning.
Right. Okay, good. Thank you, book. So why would I want to go back from that? But then I really thought, I was like, I don't want to spend 15 years. If I get 15 years, it is over. Thank God I didn't have to, like, put that to the test. But, you know, in my mind, that's what I'm thinking. So I got sentenced to 7.5 years. I went to Morgantown, West Virginia. It was scenic. They had lots of trees. And honestly, I don't know what the other side was, what other people were. I mean, it was a cakewalk, honestly. But it was my freedom. I couldn't talk how I wanted to. I couldn't tell people what to do. I couldn't be myself. And I had to follow these rules. And I was used to, like, for the last 2 years, I'm used to running and ripping and doing what I want to do. And so it was a rude awakening for me. I don't know. I spent that time, not wisely, I spent that time thinking about when I got out, like, that this will be enough time for me to be separated from alcohol. I'm gonna try to drink again. What do I have to lose? So COVID came, and that was, I think I was still in there a year after COVID came. So we were locked up 24 hours a day. You know, it was miserable. And the only thing I have to look forward to is, like, one less day. And then they started letting, like, nonviolent offenders out. And so at 4 years, they let me out to house arrest. I was on house arrest for 2 years. I had an ankle bracelet, you know, I couldn't leave the house. And I also couldn't drink because they were still drug and I wasn't. I was thinking about sober. I had when I came out, I was like, you know what? Maybe I will try sobriety. And I reached out to some of my old AA people, and they were around and whatever. But I just kind of let it drop. Because I wasn't immersed in it, and I just wasn't quite sure. But what I did know is that they were ready to take me open armed. There was no judgment. They were like, I'm glad you're back. I'm so glad to hear from you. I wish you had called sooner. There wasn't any tension like I thought there was. There wasn't any judgment. I was like, all this time, I don't know if I could have done it before, but, you know, I'm just telling you, if you go back out, you know, relapse is part of my story. So if you go back out, Don't let your pride keep you from the rooms. Just from my experience, I'm here. If somebody goes out and comes back in, I'm going to welcome you with open arms and say, I'm glad to see you. You need to be here, and what can I do to help you? So don't let that deter you from getting sober again. I spent a couple years on house arrest. I was still doing the drug treatment program, still doing therapy and still getting tested. And when that was over, it probably took about 2 weeks with me, like, you know, being able to drive and get around and go see my friends. And I did, you know, I think it was easier when I was on house arrest because I could sign out to go to AA meetings. So I was able to get out of the house because of that. And maybe that was probably why I was doing it, just so I could have a reason to leave the house. But it wasn't for real, and I wasn't invested in it. So a couple of weeks after I got that ankle bracelet off, I started my experiment on drinking again. and controlled drinking. Like this time, you know, I've done the partying. I guess I've got it out of my system. I'm gonna try this controlled drinking now, like normal people, like because I'm gonna be normal now because I've already gone to prison. I'm starting my life over. We're gonna be normal. And but there's things I won't do. I'm not gonna do drugs. Like this, that's what's got me in here. I'm not gonna do those anymore. And you know, the bar, you know, within 6 months, the bar had gotten so low that, you know, I'm right back out, you know, doing those things that got me into prison. So it was New Year's Eve. I just had enough. And, you know, I really didn't get drunk or really super high or whatever. I mean, it was still like, I don't know, it wasn't extreme. I wasn't doing anything bad. But what really brought me in here was the obsession. The obsession, that hamster wheel that I could not get off of. When I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. And I was pre-planning. And I was, you know, these are the things. Like, I need to go buy a plastic flask so I can stick it into Busch Gardens. And, you know, these things that, like, normal people don't think like that. It was just exhausting. Like, I do want to do something with my life. I know I did wrong. I want to be rehabilitated. I have something to prove to myself, and I'm going to do this. Like I want to be a nurse. I want to be a nurse. This is what I want to do. And it's probably because of all the red tape that I'll have to go through, like just to see these hurdles that I have to jump. But, I got sober on that New Year's Eve. I went into Nike Park in Carrollton. And for the first time in my life, I shared where I was. I was vulnerable. And I just let it all out. Like I said to myself, like, what do I have to lose? What is holding me back? You know, all these people around me are happy, and there really has to be something to it. And, you know, we read the promises so many times, and I just thought that was a bunch of hooey. I really thought that. Those things never happen. I just thought it was just reading. Like those things wouldn't happen. But you know, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to do everything possible I can to get these promises to happen to me. And I'm going to do every suggestion that is given to me. And that has been my trajectory since getting sober. That time, I have not said no in AA. I don't think. Don't quote me that, but I'm sure there were some notes anyways. What I do like to do is balk. So I like to balk. So I'm single. I'm going to school, but I'm only working part-time. And, you know, I'm going to like two or three meetings a week. And, you know, I talk to my sponsor, but how many meetings you go into a week? Oh, like two or three. Single guy like you, you should be going to five or six. You should be going to meeting every day. And I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I live in the boonies of Smithfield. It's all these excuses. So, you know, my balking. But when I do that, something in my mind has changed, because normally it would be a hard stop. Like, I'm not liking about it anymore. I'm not doing that. And now I'm letting it be a seed to grow in my mind. And what I've gained from that is that everything that I thought I couldn't do, like five meetings a week, you know, going to school, meeting my sponsor every week and doing these things. And every time I've done those things, everything has been okay. Like I had nothing to worry about. Like, why was I stressed out about it? And just putting those things one right after the other, it's like, I don't have to worry about it. Like, it's going to be taking care for me. So that's how I came to my higher power. That's how I came to have a faith. It wasn't because I came in the program with it. It was because of the actions that I had never been willing to do before that I was willing to do. And the results of those actions gave me the faith. It's like everything has worked out. And I know that it's not on my own volition, because on my, you know, I'm a dumpster fire. When it's left to my own devices, I am a dumpster fire, and I don't know how to live. I don't know how to communicate. I don't know anything. I stopped when I started using back when I was 7 years old in Ritalin. I stopped growing. I spent my time looking for an outlet, for peace of mind, for a substance, you know, a pill, something, and I stopped growing. So when I'm faced at being a normal adult on my own devices, I'm going to cheat, steal, lie. I'm going to do everything you're not supposed to do because I don't know any other way. So where I am now, I am so malleable. So I'm moldable. I'm like clay right now. I'm so willing. I'm so enthusiastic about AA. I just want to help people. I want to stay sober. I want to be the best person because I've done these actions and they've actually paid off. So me saying that and not having experienced that, it's just one thing. So I hope to everybody, if someone is here and it's like, I am miserable, I hope you get to a place where I am now that you can look back and say, oh my God, well, I just wasn't doing this and I wasn't doing that. And we were talking, I was talking to my sponsor today about this. I don't know what specifically works. I don't know what key is the key to my sobriety that's given me this happiness, this fearless life. So I have to continue to do it all. Like, I have to continue to do every little suggestion that was given to me. I have to be fearless. I have to be thorough. I just have to, every day, I just have a daily reprieve. And if I start slipping back into my old behaviors, I'm going to end up right where I was before. So what I believe now, I have a strong sponsor. He has a lot of experience. Before, I picked sponsors that I was able to manipulate. I wanted those soft sponsors that were going to agree and going to coddle me, and I could just manipulate because I'm a master manipulator. And if I don't want to do something, I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to tell you why I shouldn't have to do it. And I knew that if I needed to grow in this program, I had to do something different. And finding someone that I was a little intimidated by, was a little scary, you know, that's what I needed. So I needed somebody that was going to say, you know, these are the suggestions. If you do this, this is what you get. And I believe that he has done those for himself, and that's why he's sharing it with me. So building a trust with a sponsor is extremely important. You know, I don't lie to him, and he's going to trust me until I give him reason not to. So I haven't yet. Don't quote me. No, I don't. But that's what I needed. Like, I need strong sponsorship. I talk to him every day. That's so important to me. Just having, being able to have a normal conversation with people. It, you know, that's what I needed because I don't know how to do those things. And now today, I'm working to be a better person, and my forward momentum. If I'm stagnant, so like I've spoken three times, I've told my story three times. Each time I've gotten up to share my story, it feels a little different. Like I feel different because I am growing, and I just, you know, I always want to be evolving and leveling up in my sobriety, and that just takes dedication and work every single day. You know, I think my higher power for the willingness, because that is what I did not have my first time around, and that gift of desperation gave me the willingness to do whatever it took to stay sober. And God has put people in front of me to guide me in those things that have serious sobriety and that can direct me. And I'm going to take those directions because I believe that they're going to work for me. I believe that AA works. And that's why I came into AA. I knew it worked. I knew I could stay sober. I didn't know I could be happy, but I knew I could stay sober. So that's why I'm back in AA. But then changing my mentality and growing and doing those things that were hard, so hard. Getting up here and standing in front of you and talking, which is great, that it's dark, that's perfect. Perfect. I can't see you, you can't see me, especially Steve over there. I hear he's a horrible person to look at when you are up here talking. So I'm so grateful for that. I, you know, I want to get back now. I've always thought about myself. Like I just don't know what that is like to care about somebody else. And it's even easier for me with other alcoholics rather than with my family. I don't know if anybody else experiences that. Like, I have so much grace for the alcoholic, the newcomer, and then my parents, I'm like, ah! So I'm trying to find that balance, but we're not there yet, but I know I'm working in the right direction. But this is my focus. Like, I'm building my life around AA. This is really important to me, and I'm not building my life around AA. So this is the reason I'm sober. This is the reason I'm here. AA is that reason. And I have to continue to build, to keep AA in the center. Because that's what I did when I relapsed. I pulled out AA. I stopped doing all those things that those three things I was willing to do. I stopped doing those. And that's when you relapse. So, I am going to be vigilant. And I think it's really important, my home group, I think it's really important to be a greeter at your home, especially at your home group, welcoming the newcomer, going up and shaking their hands. This is, something that I was so scared to do my first sobriety or just earlier in life. I didn't want to talk to anybody, but I was so lonely. Like, I was like, why does anybody talk to me? And I'm sitting there with this horrible look on my face. Like, I wonder why nobody's talking to you. And now I just go up there and say, hello, my name is Coy. Are you new here? Welcome. It's such a big deal because I never thought that Smithfield was going to be the place that I would call my AA home. I had always been a Norfolk kid over there. And I don't, they have just like, I mean, it's just, God, it has to be God because everyone has just accepted me. I was always ostracized. Grew up in Smithfield, ostracized. I was always different. And everybody let me know that. And so to be a part of the community of Smithfield and their AA and be so loved and love all those people, it really is a gift. It's all because of the actions that I've done. If I'm sitting there off to the side with a mean look on my face, that growth doesn't come. It's open, being open, honest, and vulnerable, the big thing, vulnerable. I have to let you know where I am. I have to let you know I'm suffering. And I have to know who to reach out when I am feeling that way. And today I do. You should have those core people that you know who is going to answer. Specific times of the day, if you're going to call at 3 a.m., you need to know your 3 a.m. person that you're going to need to call. Mm-hmm. So who's going to answer the phone. And that's what I know today. And I truly have friendship today. And anybody in this room, it's just, I would do anything. I would do anything for a fellow AA, honestly. Because my life is so full and if I can give a little bit of that back, it is, it's for free. Like, it's just, my time. That is the least I could do in AA is to help others. And I'm so willing to do that. So that's what I got. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks again. Another round of applause. We can use this time, someone from our home group with some wisdom and time can come up and share on the step of the month, or we can cut it short given the circumstances. What do y'all think?
Speech.
Yeah. All right. Well, I love y'all. That's my speech. Anyone else want to come up? Okay.
I'll come up.
Coy, that was awesome.
Thank you.
Very good. And I wish that I could speak in this way. This is awesome. Right? This is awesome. I can't see anybody out there. Right. If somebody wants to pick their nose, go ahead. Right. But we're sponsee brothers, so I appreciate your experience, Strength and Hope, and what you talked about. And you're right. don't look that way if you're up here. Because I remember when I first would come up here and speak, and my sponsor would be somewhere, and I would always look for like any cues, like, how am I doing? You know? And it was always like, you know, keep going. <It's> like, I never knew where I was in this, like how I was doing, you know. So, but the more I did it, the better it got, the story got, you know. I remember the first time that I shared, I stayed drunk the whole story. I never got to the point where I could talk about step five, which is the step of the month, you know, because, you know, it was nerve wracking. So that was a great job. That was fantastic. You shared on Experience Strength and Hope, getting sponsorship, and I appreciate what you said. So step five was, it was fun. The first time I did a step five was with a sponsee was a different story. It was a little scary for me, because I felt like I had to have the answers right there and there for the guy. You know, I felt like that whatever he was going to tell me, that I just knew that he was going to tell me something that I didn't know how to handle. You know, because there's some things that people go through that I've never gone through, right? And so I was very nervous about the first time I went through, you know, as a sponsor, listening to a sponsee step five. But what I did was, I prayed about it, and I just put it in God's hands, and I just remembered what my sponsor did with me, and that was to listen, and then help me to identify where my fault was, and then help me identify which character defect it was. So I just kept it simple, you know, and it worked out pretty good for the other guy. I remember when I did mine, my sponsor never, he didn't ask me for my step four list. He just said, all right, go ahead, you know. And what that did for me was it allowed me to be honest and divulge everything that I had written down. And if there was anything that I didn't write down, and I was unwilling to divulge, and then if I wanted to divulge it afterwards, like when I got done with my list, he said, "Is that it?" And it was. When I got to my eighth step, he did the same thing, divulged the information, and he said, "Is that it?" And there was one thing I left off there, and it was because of the one thing I didn't want to tell anybody, you know. But the fifth step is really all about divulging information, and divulging it to someone who's had that same experience, who can speak to me and give me guidance on it. And when I do that with that individual, I place my life in their hands. I'm also, God is there with me. You know, God's with us, both of us, as we go through that, what I wrote down in my fourth step. And it took a little time. I do remember that I felt some relief, and I rode that laurel there for a long time, you know, because then came step six. Step six was pretty quick. Step seven was kind of quick. I didn't even give it any credence. I didn't think it was those two steps have actually turned out to be two of the biggest steps, most important steps in my life. Actually, all of them are so important, but I just didn't realize how important steps six and seven really were. Step six and seven, like five, someone tells me I have all these character defects and I'm a mess, right? Step six helps me to remember to pray to God for that character defect. Step seven hones in on the fine tuning of it. So I look at step six as like, you know, the large grit sandpaper, right? And step seven is the smoother stuff that really gets down a little bit, you know, makes it smoother, you know? And so if I can't do those steps though, if I don't know what my character defects are. So step five is very important. I recommend not skipping it. I recommend getting the fourth step done and be as thorough as you possibly can. 15 minutes a day, step four will be done in a jiffy. Don't do what I did and wait, I don't know, probably 6 months until I finish that thing. So that's my experience with step five. Thanks.
Thank you. These candles are badass. Thank you all for being here. I'm eternally grateful for y'all, God, and this program. Let me just find where we're at. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donation to the church and supplies. The rest is given to the Tidewater Inner Group, District 24, and the General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Who's speaking next Friday? Isn't it Harper?
Next Friday's Harper.
Okay.
Harper, next Friday, be there. And we also have a big book study on Tuesdays. We're in to the wives right now. It's pretty legit. There's a Liberty Bells group 29th birthday party AA pamphlet workshop Sunday, July 6th, 11 to 4. And that'll be the White Bank Park in Colonial Heights.
Is that Maryland?
Somewhere in Petersburg, didn't it?
Okay. You know what? I don't really see. Up around Petersburg. And the 25th anniversary celebration of Saturday Night Discussion. That'll be Saturday, the home group. Saturday, May 31st, and that'll be 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. There'll be a speaker, Billy B. from the Sunbury Group, and some good fixings. Any other announcements? Nina, would you mind doing the chips?
I'll even do this part for you. Would you like to?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sorry.
Everything's backed up.
It's all backed up, man.
Is it the trash cans in there?
For sure. Now, David drew the trash cans. That's fine. Thank you, David. All right, please.
He said, what?
I saw you moving them around the side.
Yeah, I did move it around the side.
Yes, you did. I saw you.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Why is all the traffic stopped?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing. It's going to be fun getting home. Okay, we use chips in AA to kind of designate time earned, but we start out with the white chip, the willing chip. Anybody who has listened tonight to Coy's speech, which was wonderful, anybody thinks they want to start this way of life, we have a white chip. So I'll set it right here for you. All right, 30 days. Anybody with 30 days? All right. How about 60 days? All right, 90 days.
Woo! Yeah. How'd you do it?
How'd you do it?
You got 90 days.
Oh, I did it a couple times, I think.
All right,
hell yeah.
6 months. Yay, 6 months. All right, anyone with 9 months? Anyone tonight with a year from another home group? Because I would know if we have one.